Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, sometimes the international. And oh, yeah, we cover down on all of it. Like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number three on Hump Day. We're going to take you all the way to go home time. This is a thing we like to do, though, on Wednesday afternoons. And right now, we're working to corral up our sous chef who's sitting in for Dale Jackson, Scott Buttram. We're trying to get him on. But in the meantime, let me just go ahead and double check that from FM Talk 106.5 down in Mobile. And oh, by the way, host of the Jeff Poor Show. And oh, by the way, the editor-in-chief of 1819 News. And also, oh, by the way, doing work with Lanyap and with Breitbart. Hey, Jeff Poor, are you there?
I am present.
You are indeed. Thank you, brother. We do not have a Scott Buttram, but two out of three are here, so I do pronounce a quorum, so hit it, man.
Assemble the Grand Council.
Ba-da! Ba-da! All right, well, we'll hope that Buttram can get in here pretty quick, and if he does, we'll just get him on. But in the meantime, Jeff Poor, did you watch the debate last night?
I did. What did you think of it?
Well, so I've spent a little time on the show talking about it already, but I mean, I looked at it and I thought, okay, there were not a lot of like gaffes. I thought J.D. Vance had a lot of poise, a lot of great command of the moment. He didn't get rattled, even when he was being fact-checked by the so-called non-fact-checking moderators. I think that he had the better night. But there were some moments on both sides I think could have been stronger, but then I think there were gaffes on Waltz's side. So your thoughts, what do you think?
Probably everything, whatever you wanted to see, you got whatever you wanted out of it, right? And I tell you what, so kind of flipping around the different channels and hearing the MSNBC commentators, oh, a resounding victory for Tim Walz. And then, you know, Hannity, and I personally thought J.D. Vance won. But I don't know that it moved a whole lot. The best thing that the Vance-Trump team got out of it was it broke away from the branding that they tried to apply to J.D. Vance, making him like a guy who sleeps on couches or whatever it was they were trying to stir up there. And this gave the public its first taste of J.D. Vance, I think, that wasn't this.
Yeah, I think they got to see why he made the final cut to be the VP candidate because, I mean, the man, no fooling, I mean, he has a great resume. He's got an interesting background. He's sort of made a name for himself. He's even been able to be outspoken at times when it was uncomfortable. He's done these interviews where he's been willing to be combative or have, you know, the combative interviewer. But we never got to see him just double down on his positions on policy and also sort of keep the tone going at the same time. So I think the big moment last night for Vance was just being in command of the moment. I think the big moment for Walz was not screwing up. I mean, right now the Walz-Harris campaign team, they're not in let's win this thing mode. They're in let's don't lose this thing mode. That's kind of where they are.
Well, let me say this about that. Yeah. I think also the thing about how Walz started slow, but he finished okay. Like you said, he didn't screw up too bad. He didn't pull a Biden in June. But I thought he was better than Kamala Harris was in the debate last month. And my takeaway from it, he's probably better suited to be president than she is.
You know what? I almost want to argue that, but I can't, because she was so contrived. She was such a scripted actress that night that I thought you could see he was nervous, but that also made him real. Walz, I'm talking about. You could see that he was stumbling for words occasionally and getting a little bit ahead of himself, but that also made him real. And I didn't find fault. People were talking about how he was nervous. Oh, he was nervous. Well, frickin', I've been nervous too. So what do you say to that? But I thoroughly disagree with his policy positions. But I gotta ask you, did you break out in a cold sweat about the Tiananmen Square thing?
I felt bad for him. Yeah,
oh my God,
pity. Just what do you say about that? And he's still today fumbling around out there on it. But I don't know. Like, if I'm caught in a big lie like that, and I, we don't, Senator, let me ask you this, because when did debate moderation become this series of gotcha questions at both candidates? Yeah. Like, I think you, if you want to corner them in a gotcha scenario, then you have the opportunity to interview them or and do that. But in a debate, throw out a policy question, maybe use what they've said in the past about it for and use that to set it up. But this was nothing but gotcha. I don't think that serves the public interest.
It doesn't. It also does not endear the lamestream media to the public that they already struggle with their reputation as being trustworthy. And then they announce up front these two shrews are sitting there, these two soulless harpies are gonna moderate the debate, looking like they have had just, you know, far too much lemonade before they got on the stage. And they say, and there will be no fact checking. And then what did they do? They fact checked. But I'll be honest with you, to me, the moment where I went, yeah, the moment where I was glad to see something finally happen was when he didn't let them get away with, when J.D. Vance did not let them get away with fact-checking without calling him out on it. And they shut his microphone off, but he got a few words in.
Yeah, that was refreshing. It was like the Mean Girl camp counselors, and they just they just kind of scowled, and they looked miserable, like they didn't want to be there. And it was really, I don't think they did themselves any favor, but I don't understand that setup from the get-go. Here's the thing. Republicans have to stop enabling these legacy mainstream media outlets, and they cannot do this anymore. They have to say no and not do these debates. I think if you want to do a debate, it has to be, and if it's, you know, some mainstream media outlet, it's got to be done like the CNN debate in June, which could have been home cooking just to get Biden out of the way. Who knows? But that's what Republicans have to insist on, or they have to say no to these outlets.
Okay, so let me ask you this. That goes to the next question I was going to try and get in here. In the event that we had our wish list, and we could say, if we're going to, and by the way, I like the debate. I think it's fair game for people to get up there and have a debate. But if we're gonna have a debate, what would you like to see it? What's the format? Who are the moderators? What would be the best idea for a debate, in your opinion?
Well, it's like I said, you tee it up with, okay, immigration. In the past, Senator Vance, you said X, Y, Z about immigration. Or Governor Walz, you were your running mate said this and this, and you said this. Please, for the audience, elaborate on your position here. And then, I don't know, maybe you could try to work in some back and forth. I'm not necessarily against a back and forth as long as there's discipline from both sides. But I don't like this. You January 6th, you Tiananmen Square, you abortion, you whatever else. It was just these two terrible human beings, and they're like they were on the scoreboard or something.
I think there ought to be some moderators who come in that are not mainstream. I think you ought to have a Joe Rogan. I think you ought to have, you know, which might be a little scary. They might even say no to that. But I think you could have like a Joe Rogan, Megyn Kelly, Tucker Carlson panel that's doing the debate. And I think they have to ride in the back seat of a car and answer questions while they're sitting next to each other in the back seat of the Ford LTD. That's what I think ought to happen.
That sounds.
Daddy, he's on my
like
side of the seat.
For reality TV. I tell you what, though. What I think you might have to see in the future is you can't let a CBS or ABC do. You've got to have a partnership or something with a conservative component to it. These mainstream media outlets are out of hand.
Yeah, I totally agree. And then there was a time when I liked it, but it got out of hand when they actually would allow questions from the audience, and that can be really risky because then you realize they're high grading questions sometimes. But there's times when I think the moderator is stepping back and letting somebody else ask a question. There's got to be a different format because this gotten stale right now. All right, listen, man. That's
stale. It's just unfair, right?
Well, yeah, especially the way it's been run this year. Well, and also 2020. Oh, and oh, by the way, 2016. Let's take a break. We're taking a break right now. That's round one of a partial Grand Council. Just me and Jeff Poor right now. Dale Jackson was out, and our sous chef has disappeared. If we can get him on the phone, we will. Bill Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Yeah. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, pulling pins on truth grenades. All right, we're back to round two with a partial grand counsel, my brethren Jeff Poor from down yonder in Mobile. All right, hey, Jeff, let me ask you this. There's a story that just broke while I was on the air. U.S. District Judge Chutkan has decided to unseal the evidence so that the world can see it for reasons I cannot fathom. 30 days for the trial, Jack Smith has dropped a new 165-page brief with a bunch of allegations and evidence in it, and the judge has decided the whole world needs to be able to see it. Is this the October surprise? Are we finally there?
It's a pretty weak October surprise, isn't it?
Is this all they got? I don't know.
I mean, like, swampy D.C. district judge and this unconstitutional special counsel they got the goods now. Gee, maybe they'll indict him and his poll numbers will go up another 5 points.
I don't know if they recognize that, but every time they have done something, his poll numbers have indeed gone up. It's almost been like the benefit to his campaign.
They're just bitter. They're not able to get anything to connect here, and this is what they're going to do on October the 2nd? I don't get it.
All right, then here's my question, my follow-up, though. Is there an October surprise, and what would you imagine it would be?
I think there's a good chance there's an October surprise that could be used against Kamala Harris because we don't know anything about her. As far as Trump, I mean, here it is. He's been running for almost 10 years for president, and if you're sitting on something in October of 2024 for a guy that started running for president in 2015, then you've already missed your opening. But I think you could see something on the other side. I don't know what that is. I don't know. It would get the media probably wouldn't pick it up anyway, but I guess this stuff about Kamala Harris's husband, but I don't know that stuff really moves the needle either.
Now they declared him as being a benefit to masculinity, apparently, because of the fact that he impregnated his nanny.
Why do they do that? Why do they set themselves up for these unproven people?
I cannot explain this. I'm through trying to explain them. I just call it out now. But you watch. Think about where Kamala's from. She was the DA in San Francisco, was she not?
Yes.
District attorney in San Francisco. There's going to be, you watch, I bet in the next 5 or 6 or 7 days, there's going to be a video of her marching in a gay pride parade with some extremely inappropriate things happening while she laughs and has a good time and children standing on the sidelines.
That's quite a vision you had in your dreams, isn't it?
let's don't go too far. What I'm saying is that could happen.
You're very elaborate and very intricate with the details here, so I'm just saying.
Yeah, then maybe I'm actually about to release it. Who knows? Maybe it's going to be breaking
true.
News.
Yeah, maybe you got the goods.
I'll give you first dibs. You can have the first interview. All right, change the subject then. What is your question for round two?
Round two, let's bring it back home to the state of Alabama.
All right.
Glock switches. And the Sensler bill to ban Glock switches. Yeah. Number one, the constitutionality of it. We couldn't enforce HB 56 back in the day.
Yeah.
Because it doubled up on federal law. It was a aspect of law that the federal government was in charge of. Number one, why is this any different? And number two, why aren't they going after the manufacturers of these Glock switches? I don't know how they're made, where they're made, or any of that. I assume it's somebody's basement with a 3D printer or something.
Yep.
But couldn't they go after that and at least deter some of the manufacturing of these things?
Well, listen, here's the thing: if you're going to virtue signal, it ought to at least be virtuous. And if you're gonna say we're gonna recognize that the whole bump stock thing fell apart, but we're gonna go after another component that makes a gun do things that we don't like, and never ever once recognize that what the real problem is. Are the people that pull the trigger? That's the problem. I mean, last night in the debate, what's his name? Waltz says sometimes it's just about the guns. No, it's really not. It's about who loaded them, who fired them, and then who committed the crime thereof. So Glock, I mean, I get what Ensler's doing. Ensler's a nice guy. I've had him on my show before. He's a sincere individual. He's a screaming liberal, but it's the kind of guy you can talk to. But I don't think this bill – here's the thing. What I will watch out for is some weak-kneed Republicans who want to throw a bone to the situation and say, well, we'll support that.
I think – I don't know who stops it. The only way it gets stopped is somebody keeps it from getting on the floor. If it gets on the floor, you got to vote for it.
If it gets on the floor, you don't have to vote for it. If it gets on the floor, I'd get out there. I mean, listen – I've been in those debates before where it's uncomfortable, but you go out there and you say, by God, I think you're still wrong. And I'm sorry. And I'm sorry that there's been a lot of shootings in a place where they don't actually, you know, enforce the law and upfund the police. But the truth is that little piece of plastic is not the real problem. It's just a token.
Before you run out of time here, since I brought up HB 56, and I'm going to use on your show my point of personal privilege.
Okay.
To ask you this, though. Elliot down here is talking about bringing that back since the courts have changed, and that he thinks it might have legs this time. It could be state law. What do you think of that?
You're talking about the Beeson-Hammond Act, the illegal immigration bill? Yes. I said the same thing on my show the other day. I said, I think that we are in a different time. I think that we're in I think we as a legislature were ahead of our time by implementing a state level version of illegal immigration enforcement. That it went straight to the usual suspect judges who will dismantle anything conservative, Myron Thompson being one. But I do believe that we're in a time where we can see it now. We can see it more clearly, and where states' rights, you know, we may even have an attorney general now who's more prone to help defend the issue than we had before.
Now, Luther was awful.
Luther had nothing going on. Luther was for Luther, and Luther was looking for the next position.
Might have been the worst AG and, well,
we had Troy King.
At least to the 80s.
We had Troy King. I mean, we had one with hair, and we had one with aspirations, and then, you know, then now we have Steve Marshall, who I think will actually defend the issues. So I agree with Elliot. In fact, great point. I think I need to get him on my show again soon because I was there. I saw it. I lived through the protests in the hallways and was proud that we passed it. I don't care what the liberal judges said, and I think it definitely needs to come back. There may be some modifications to it. You know, learn from lessons in the past, tweak it a little bit, but it definitely needs to happen. Because if we don't get Trump in there, we're going to have some 10th Amendment action to start dealing with the issue.
It's going to be expensive, but I think you're right. You got to do it.
Hey, brother, appreciate you doing a two-man council with me. Thanks for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, see you, buddy. That was Jeff Poore, and we'll try to find our brother Scott Buttram and see what's up. In the meantime, you guys, we will be right back.